In today's captivating episode, we had the privilege of sitting down with Kevin Lowe from Grit, Grace, and Inspiration podcast. And let me tell you, his story will leave you utterly spellbound. Kevin is redefining what it means not just to survive, but to truly thrive. And I'll let Kevin tell a story, but picture this. At the age of 17, his life took a turn after a life-saving surgery that left him blind. Yet through his unwavering faith, the support of his family, and a bit of grit and resilience, Kevin has forged a path filled with newfound perspectives on life and boundless creativity. You won't want to miss this interview packed with unexpected twists and turns that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Kevin's story isn't just inspiring, it's transformative. Prepare to see the world through fresh eyes as Kevin shares his story. So grab your popcorn, cozy up, and get ready for an interview that's as entertaining as it is enlightening.
Hello, creative soul. Welcome to the Beauty Hunters podcast. Are you feeling stuck? Not having enough time, money, or energy to create? Do you want to make a difference in this world with your creativity, but you feel exhausted by life's responsibilities and void of inspiration? You are not alone.
We are your hosts, Jonathan and Michelle Rose, fellow creative souls who understand the struggle. We once lived a life consumed by the daily grind, leaving us feeling empty and dead inside. And that all changed when we discovered the mindsets and skills that allowed us to stay in creative flow and infuse everyday life with creative passion. We are here with strategies and inspiration to help you fill your daily life with vibrant creativity.
If you are ready to thrive and take your creativity to the next level, then grab your coffee, tune in, and let's create a more beautiful world together. All right. Well, Beauty Hunters, we have a special treat today. We are here with Kevin Lowe. Kevin, good to see you today.
Yeah, man. You guys too. Excited to be here.
So we cross paths with Kevin because we have the same podcasting coach, and he has a podcast as well. He's been doing it longer than we have, and we thought that today's conversation would be very relevant to our listeners because Kevin has a very unique perspective on creativity, and that will become apparent as we unpack some of his life's story and some of the things that he has been through. So we hope today, Kevin, that we can just kind of tease out the intersection of your story with just the idea of pursuing beauty in life and pursuing your best creative self. And yeah. I think that you have a lot to offer our audience today. And I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, man, me too. I'm very excited and thrilled to be here.
So without any further ado, Kevin, why don't you just tell us how can people connect with you? A little bit about what you're currently doing, and then I'd like to just dive into some of your story and some of the important things that people should know about you.
Yeah, well, cool. Yeah, so best place to connect with me, anybody interested, is really through the podcast, and that is called Grit, Grace, and Inspiration. If you need a central hub, you can literally just go to the website, which is gritgraceinspiration.com. I'm not real big on social media, but I do like a weekly midweek boost, kind of that's my newsletter. So you can sign up for that on the website and then just get plugged into the podcast.
Yep. And we will have links to all things Kevin Lowe in our show notes. So Kevin, let's just dive right in, man. So you lost your eyesight in 2003,
yes.
Which I just can't even imagine.
Yes.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, or a lot about that? We just want to know what happened that led to the loss of your eyesight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, even for myself, you know, now just over 20 years later, there is many times when I still can't even believe it, especially when I realize how long it's been. I was back in 2003. I was 17 years old. I was in my junior year of high school. Things were going great. I mean, I was just like every other kid, just doing school. I had finally kind of found like a really awesome group of friends. And I had my own truck. It was a Ford F-150 4x4
nice.
That I had got for my sweet 16. And me being a Southern boy loving to go mudding in the woods, I was happy to say my truck was taller than anybody else's in school. yep, awesome. I had 8 inches of lift with 38-inch TSL Super Swampers, and it was my baby. Unfortunately, I only got to drive that truck for 1 year. Because right after the start of my junior year of high school, my mom and grandmother, they started asking questions, and they weren't getting the answers they wanted from my pediatrician. Why was I not growing? Why did I always have migraine headaches? Why did I drink more than any human on the face of this earth, is what my mom would say to the doctor. All these different things. Why hadn't gone through puberty? And the doctor, he just kept saying, oh, don't worry about it. He's just a late bloomer. And finally, my mom and grandmother, they had enough. And so about the time of my 17th birthday, so that's the end of September, around that time frame is when we got me to a new family doctor. And he was actually a new doctor to town, and got an appointment with him. He took literally one look at me, one look at my chart, and he pulled my mom out the hallway. And he said, listen, he said, I don't know what it is. He said, but something's off and something's not right. And we need to get him to a specialist immediately. That would be the first domino to drop. Things would go so fast between that point and the climax. There were many different doctor's appointments, to endocrinologists, and then, the pediatric neurosurgeon. Matter of fact, he was the leading pediatric neurosurgeon in the country.
Nice.
Located just an hour away. And, everything, man, it was, the ball was rolling, and it was scary, but it was also a relief because we finally figured out what was wrong. My mom got the call back from the MRI. And it was the endocrinologist, and he had on the phone that pediatric neurosurgeon that I talked about. And they asked if she was driving, to which she said yes. And they asked if she would please pull over.
It's never a good way to start a conversation.
No. And so the results came back, and as the doctor said, it's worse than I ever could have imagined. I had a plum-sized brain tumor. Basically right in the center of my head.
Wow.
This tumor had completely encased my pituitary gland. It was in the crosshairs of my optic nerve, and it was pressing against my carotid artery to the point that they literally said I had at most 6 months to live if this tumor was not removed. Luckily, thankfully, the tumor was non-cancerous, thank goodness. So we didn't have that to contend with. I remember when my mom told me the news, it's funny how our memory works. It's like snapshots. I can picture myself in the cabin of our boat. The next snapshot is me out of the boat, running up the dock as fast as I could, going up the stairs of the marina up to the top. And I remember just with my arms folded against the metal railing, just looking out at the marina, because I never thought it would be something like a brain tumor. When we talked with these doctors and stuff, I mean, I never thought something like that. As scary as it was, the doctor, though, he let us know. He's like, listen, he said, I do these all the time. He said, he told me, he's like, Kevin, we're going to go in. He said, we're going to remove the tumor. He's like, you'll be out of school for about 3 to 4 weeks. And the worst news was that he told me I had to stay off of my new four-wheeler for 6 months. And
that would be tragic.
Yeah. And so it was like, okay, well, this is awesome. We're all gung-ho. Surgery was going to be, I think, probably about 2 weeks after that appointment. And so me being the creative person I am, my sense of humor, I named my tumor Bob the tumor. So of course, Bob the tumor would have a going away party. And so my whole family, you know, gathered together for a big celebration prior to, you know, surgery day. And surgery was October 28th, 2003. I was checked into the hospital the day before. That night, a big part of my story is family. And that night in the hospital, I had my whole family there. I had my uncle flew in from out of town. My mom and dad, they divorced when I was young, around like second grade. But in times like this, you would never know that there was any separation in family because both sides of the family gathered together like one.
They just rallied together, put it aside, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And everybody was piled into my hospital room. I wanted Outback Steakhouse for dinner that night. So my my sister and aunt went out and got takeout for everybody. And we sat there getting ready. Last thing I remember is laying in the bed later that night with my sister. She got in the bed with me and we were watching one of my favorite movies on the laptop, Too Fast, Too Furious, with those ancient things called DVDs.
Right.
And next morning came, my mom and dad were the ones who went with me all the way to the OR. And if I knew then what I know now, I don't know that I ever could have stopped staring. I don't know that I ever could have stopped staring at their faces.
Yeah.
Because once I went through the operating rooms, everything changed. The doctor would come out hours and hours later and let my family know that the surgery was a success, that everything went perfect. My recovery was anything less than perfect. All kinds of things were going wrong, all different kinds of hormone levels and sodium levels, that it was just a battle. But the big thing to happen was on, I forget it, I always get confused if it was one day after or maybe 3 days after surgery, when the head nurse was in the room along with my mom. And I was very combative during this time with my sodium levels out of whack. And apparently one of the things that I kept yanking off was the little pulse ox machine that they put on your finger or toe. And the head nurse, he was like, "Kevin, do you see this?" Talking about the blinking red light on the pulse ox machine that was on my toe. He's like, "Do you see this red light?" And my mom said that I just said, no, it's just black. At that moment, he looked at my mom looked at him. He walked over and he hit the light switch on and off. He's like, "Kevin, do you see this light? Do you see this?" No, it's just black. It's just black. It was at that moment.
How long had you been awake out of surgery before that?
Like I said, I can't remember. It was either like one day, 3 days. I have no memory after going into the operating room. My memory doesn't pick up until probably a month or so later. Do I have any memory? But it wasn't very long after when that happened. And that's when they discovered that I was left completely blind. We would come to discover I lost my ability to smell. I had short-term memory loss for 6 months. And then I have all these medical complications with me now having no pituitary gland that the tumor had killed off. And so now I'm taking all these medications to try to replace what the body should do naturally. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I still deal with today and I'll deal with for my entire life. But that was the moment. That was the moment when everything changed. And I wanted to say, in terms of you know, beauty and beauty hunters, and creative, I not only lost my sight, but for a long time I lost my identity.
Can only imagine.
The way in which I learned was visual. I loved to draw from the time I was a little kid. In high school, I was big into drafting and design. Was always doodling, always making pictures. And even just the way I learned was always visual. And
So that creative streak is really deep for you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it took a really long time to finally get to a point where I could learn to love this life again, even if I couldn't see it.
Yeah. And so what did that journey look like? You know, what kinds of things did you have to, I know when Jonathan lost his hearing loss in one ear, it was almost like he had to retrain himself to figure out his creative process and how he was going to even tap into those same joys and inspirations of life.
Yeah. For myself, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, because I found it to be true that I no longer had access to certain pathways towards my creativity. One of them for me being silence, because I lost hearing, but then it was replaced with tinnitus. And I lost access to silence, which was a huge part of my creative process for poetry. So I can only imagine losing two senses and what that did to your process. So what was that like?
Yeah. The first long while was honestly what I call survival mode. It was literally just me and my family. And I stress the fact that what happened to me happened to an entire family. And And for a long time, it was nothing more than survival mode. It was getting through one day to the next. And I was in school. Of course, I never went back to school the rest of my junior year of high school. Instead, I started having teachers. I had three teachers through a program called Hospital Homebound. And they came to my grandparents' house. So my mom would drop me off each morning and I would spend the day with Nana. And I would have my three teachers come every day. One of the teachers taught me my school subjects. Another one taught me how to do what I called at the time blind stuff, which I was not very thrilled about. that was learning how to read Braille and how to use a talking computer. And then the third teacher was my mobility instructor. Again, something I wasn't real crazy about, using now this dorky white cane to help me get around. And I was really well off school-wise going into this. And so it didn't really take much for me to be able to get through those classes, to pass those, and be able to get back on track with the schoolwork as far as to be back in school for the start of my senior year, which was a really big deal for me because I had a goal from the very beginning to get to graduate with my class. And secretly, my mom, my grandma, they never thought that would happen, but it did. As far as learning, it's funny, honestly, how quickly you adapt. I say that even though now I obviously am not a visual learner, I still do visual things. So like when I went back to school, for my senior year, and then even when I dabbled in college afterwards, when I will be in math classes and I have somebody reading off a math equation, I literally am constantly with my finger writing out the math equation on the desk, you know, so that I can so that I can visualize it, you know.
You say quickly, but my experience, I can say quickly in hindsight that I adapted, but when I was in the middle of my hearing loss, like right after it, it felt like an eternity. It was
For myself, I quickly adapted in terms of nailing the skills. Learning to read Braille, I did that super quick. Learning to use the talking computer, I did that really quick. Learning to
relearning who Kevin Lowe is.
Yeah, exactly. Relearning who I was, learning to love this life again, it took a long time. Wow. Matter of fact, I would tell you that it took the better part of about 10 years before I finally came to a point in my life when I realized that my faith, I haven't talked about my faith, but my faith is huge for me. And forever, I would pray every single night when I would go to bed for God to let me see again in the morning, because I know God can heal. And yet every morning I'd wake up and I'd open my eyes and I'd see the same thing that I did when they were closed. Yeah. And every single morning I would have my heart broken. It took about 10 years until I was reading a book one day, and the last chapter of the book, it had a character in the book who was standing in a river. They had just finished this whitewater rafting adventure. And matter of fact, it was with a guy who was blind, Eric Weinmayer. And it was a book about his journey kayaking the Grand Canyon. And this last chapter had his guide, who was sighted, and his guide is standing in the middle of the river with his arms outstretched, his fingers splayed, letting the current of the river run through his fingers. And he said, "I'll be back someday, but for right now, I've got more life to live." Mm. And when he said that, when I listened to that in my audiobook, it hit me like nobody's business. I realized then why I even read that book in the first place was for that one sentence in the last chapter, was because I finally realized that, God, I don't have to give up on my faith that you're going to let me see again. But I know now that it might not be till I'm in heaven, and that's okay, because right now I've got more life to live.
That is so good. That's a
powerful message.
That's good for anybody to hear.
Yeah, no matter what we're going through, I think that advice is key for getting over, I mean, just fill in the blank, getting over anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And I feel like the most important thing there is to realize that we all take our own time. The different blind centers and stuff, the counselors there, they would, you know, tell my mom how Kevin needs to accept this. He needs to move on. He needs to embrace this new life. And my mom would always tell them, Kevin will do it when Kevin is ready. Mm-hmm. And that's what it took.
That's a good mom.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
I'm curious. Do you remember the first time that you ventured back into something you would call creative after you lost your sight?
I guess probably if I think about it, it would be my senior year of high school when I went back. And one of the classes I took the first part of the year was English. That was a subject I always really enjoyed because I always enjoyed writing. And I realized something powerful was that even though I can't see, I can still be really creative with words. And so in that class, when it was time for us to write all different types of poetry, I mean, I got to understand how I could still be creative just in a different way, not drawing, but instead drawing with words. And so I wrote so many incredible poems that always had the class absolutely cracking up because I would write some crazy, like we were supposed to write a love poem. So I did it as if I had a seeing eye dog. And that was my love.
Oh, you know? I love it. And then
we had to write a poem one day about, I forget what it was supposed to be. Well, I wrote this poem that was like super sexy sounding. Like you totally thought I was talking about this woman, this tropical island, until the very end and you realize Chiquita is a banana.
Yes.
I wrote a similar poem about coffee once.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It was so good.
So Kevin, one of the things I've heard you say that I find the most intriguing, I've heard you say that blindness is not your greatest disability. Can you expound on that?
So for the first years, I would never have said this. I would say that blindness was my greatest disability. As the years have gone on, I've realized that being blind, I can overcome that. Being labeled panhypopit, meaning that my pituitary doesn't work, I can't overcome that. I mean, yeah, I get to use medicines, and we all know they're no match to what the body should do naturally. And so there's many days with my type of condition where I'm just exhausted that day for mm-hmm. no reason but what I'm dealing with. And my medicines, it's a constant balancing act. If I was given a choice, you know, to have either my sight back or to be just healthy again, I honestly would have to choose just being healthy again. Yeah. Because I've learned that is a far greater disability than the blindness.
Wow. How have you made peace with so many things out of your control? Or have you made peace with so many things out of your control?
Yeah, no, 100%. And that comes back to my faith. I feel like I'm really lucky in the fact that I get to look back on my life from the time I was a little kid, and I get to see how God's hands were at work the entire time. I can see so plainly how the first 17 years of my life were spent preparing me to become blind. God, he gave me characteristics like being super organized, a really beneficial thing when you're blind. He gave me opportunities to get to travel a ton. As a kid, we went to California. We went to Alaska, went up, you know, West Virginia snow skiing, down to the Florida Keys lobstering, out in the middle of the woods with my dad camping and dirt biking. I got to do so much. And I can see where God has always been at work. And I found peace in the fact in knowing that there's a greater play at work here, that it's all in God's plan. And so today, when I start getting a little bit worried about tomorrow, about where life is and where it's not at when I think it should be somewhere else, I have to realize, and I just stop and I go back to God's plan. And I focus on being sure that I am doing my part in embracing this moment instead of worrying about tomorrow.
What you just said leads me to another question. I'm curious, what beauty would you have not been able to see with your sight that you can see without your sight?
You know, the biggest thing for myself is picking up about people. It's one of the most powerful things that I realized with the podcast, is that I finally get to show the rest of the sighted world what it's like to see somebody based solely on their voice, only through the words that they speak, the stories they share, the emotion in their voice. And I honestly can get so annoyed sometimes at people, the sighted people, when they'll say certain things. And I'm like, you don't even know that person. You just saw them across the street. You didn't have the opportunity to learn why they're here, who they are based on their story. You just saw them and immediately formed an opinion in your head. And I'm not saying that I don't do that at times, but I am blessed with that opportunity to get to see people on a far deeper, you know, value than just seeing them with our eyes.
Yeah. So your blindness is adding a whole level of depth to your ability to connect with people because you don't have that visual prejudice.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely.
That is beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. So why don't you tell us about your current creative pursuits? And it's just amazing that you are doing what you're doing and not letting a disability hold you back. But what's your current creative life? What are you pursuing these days?
Yeah. So right now my creative pursuits are all tied into the podcast. Before starting the podcast, I was a travel agent. So I started my own home-based travel agency in 2013. And that was another thing talking about creative pursuits is I got to create a brand. I got to create a company. And with every client I worked with, I got to design a vacation. And I got to design those all based around these sensory elements to be sure that somebody got to experience a destination and not just see it. And so I did that up until the 2020 pandemic when the travel agency, as I say, took a nosedive in the shallow end of the swimming pool. And I was forced to make a decision. And that was to either stay on course with travel or make a pivot. That's when I found podcasting. Now, at the time, the podcast I thought was to benefit me as a travel agent. That's why I started it, as a way to keep the idea of travel alive, talking about vacations. And then quickly podcasting took over my life and led me in a whole nother direction that's got me where today, where I have the podcast and now I do, you know, purpose coaching, where I work with my clients and helping them to identify their life's purpose, which I feel is the foundation by which we can then create a life that we truly love and brings us fulfillment. Is it's all based on first identifying that that purpose that we all have, and then we can discover how to build a life around it.
Yeah, and I would dare say you are superlatively qualified to do that because you had to find that purpose out of some very dark depths.
Yeah.
So that's just amazing and it's inspiring. And man, we're so glad that you've shared that story with us. What's your best advice for someone pursuing their creativity, but particularly trying to regain a sense of creativity after tragedy?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to just be open for just exploration, for playing around. You know, if you're somebody who has lost one of your senses, you know that it's hard, especially if it was a sense that you relied on heavily. As I talked about me being a visual learner and now being left completely blind, I feel like the biggest thing is for you just to give yourself grace, to let yourself realize that it's going to come naturally with time. I feel like you just need to keep moving forward, to keep doing a little something every day. And the biggest thing for myself that got me through it, especially for those first few years that it was so hard, was fun. My grandmother, my Nana, who I stayed with in the day, she made things fun. Whether we were trying to work on my school subjects or me and her just out goofing off, we had fun. And I feel like for any of us to find a creative endeavor, for us to find passion again, we have to allow ourselves to have some fun, to laugh, to be silly, and to just learn how to enjoy life and to see life in a whole new way.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, that is really good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, solid advice, and right in line with a lot of conversations we've already had on this podcast about just the power of play, the power of community.
Yeah.
For staying engaged, but also holding space for the kind of interactions in life that can lead us into the encounters that inspire awe and wonder and get us back in touch with those parts of ourselves that desire beauty.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So awesome. Well, Kevin, is there anything else you feel like our audience needs to know or that you want to say?
You know, I think the last little thing that I would say in relation to my story is for us to never underestimate just the power of our own bodies, of our own mind. I didn't touch on this during our conversation, but in 2017, so 14 years after becoming completely blind, I began the process of learning to see again through echolocation. That has completely changed my life.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story. I will post links to those episodes specifically to your podcast in the show notes because I found that fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. And I guess my thing is just for anybody who you feel like life is really tough and you hate what has happened to you, to not underestimate the power of your other senses. Give it a little bit of time. Like I said, it was 14 years later before I got to develop a skill of echolocation. Give it time. It doesn't have to take 14 years, but just give yourself the grace, the time to discover parts about yourself that maybe you never even knew were possible before.
Yeah. And one thing about your story with that was fascinating, of course, everybody needs to go listen to that episode, is the fact that you didn't give up on yourself, the ability to even try out that resource.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Or that you were actually open to other possibilities, thinking multidimensionally and allowing yourself access to other possibilities for seeing rather than just the traditional box of, I want my sight like it was before. It's not like it was before, but you still have sight now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what I say. I get to see again, just in a whole new, beautiful way.
Awesome. So I've got more of a technical question about that echolocation because I was totally in my mind just geeking out over the whole concept and principle. Here's one thing that I was shocked by when you were telling that story on your podcast is how quickly you developed that ability.
Yes. Yeah.
I would have thought that would have taken months, if not years, to develop that ability. You were talking about days.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally. And that
I was shocked.
It was so fascinating because I remember when I was talking with the instructor about going out to California to train with him. I remember on the phone, he told me, he said, I asked him, I'm like, how long does it take most people to really get it? And he told me, he said, average is 3 days. Sure enough, it was day three when it all clicked together. Yeah.
That blows my mind.
Okay. So that our audience knows what echolocation is, do you mind real quickly explaining just what that even means?
Yeah, absolutely. So think of what we know about a bat or a dolphin using echolocation to see. Basically, us humans can do the same exact thing. And so basically, I have retrained my brain's visual cortex to see through sound rather than sight. And so I do a little tongue click with my tongue against the roof of my mouth, just makes a little snapping noise. Why we do the tongue click? Well, because our mouth is positioned right between our two ears. And so therefore the echo with that tongue click is bouncing right back at my ears. My brain has learned to interpret that echo into what we call an acoustic image. Basically, I get to see the shapes of things now. So before, my world was just literally just black, where now it's full of dimension. I mean, it's still black. It's still different shades of gray and shiny black, but things have shape now. Since 2017, it still seems to always get a little bit better. Even when I don't mean for it, like sometimes when I'm in the kitchen and the faucet's running and for some reason the faucet is the water is hitting a plate in the sink just right where it just activates my echolocation. And I'll be in there with my family, with my mom, my sister, and I can see their figure. I can see their entire shape, and it without even trying. And it's just, it's wild stuff.
Okay. I gotta pause there on that. What are those moments like when all of a sudden you see something new?
It's freedom. It's just freedom. Getting to see, like I said, I don't get to see my family's faces like I used to, but I now have a new tool that people still today say is impossible. They say it's not possible. And yet I've proved it is. And I get to open a world up to me where I no longer can only see what my fingers touch or my cane hits against, but instead I get to preview my environment. And it's just literally game changing.
Yeah.
So cool.
That's beautiful.
That is so.
Yeah, I love that.
Yes.
All right, Kevin, I got one more fun question, and this is my question for all of our guests right at the end. If I were to start a Justice League or the Avengers for creatives, what would your creative superpower be?
Oh man, I think it has to be my ability to see people on a deeper level. I spoke about it earlier during a conversation, and I truly believe that would be my superpower, is getting to see people in a way far greater than sight can allow, in a way that you understand not just who they are, but what they're all about.
Oh, so what would be your name if you had emotional X-ray vision?
Oh my gosh. Now I got a super cool name. I don't know.
Every superhero's got to have a good name.
I don't know. I mean, my name's Kevin. Let's just go with Super K.
There you go.
I like it. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. You have a beautiful story. Your life, Kevin, the way you look at life, the perspective is not in and of itself is creative, because you don't let things hold you back. You just keep searching for the beauty that's around you everywhere you go. And it is so fascinating. It's like, it's inspiring me to want to just actually close my eyes and truly just soak in what beauty I can sense around me, because I feel dulled in my sensories when I listen to you talk.
That's true.
Aww.
Yeah.
You know what I think it is more than even the senses. I feel like for me, I realized how precious life is. I realized that everything we have can change in the blink of an eye. And I was blessed with this new look on life where I understand that every single second is the greatest blessing we'll ever have. And I just live a life where I'm grateful for everything. That's my prayer as soon as I wake up in the morning, is to name as many things as I can think of right off the bat that I'm grateful for. And that's how I choose to live my life. And it means the world to me to hear you say what you've said, because it makes me realize that other people see it and maybe it's helping to make a difference in the world. And honest to goodness, that's my mission at the end of the day, is to make a difference in the world, to make my creator proud, to use what I've been through to be a benefit to somebody else.
Yeah. Well, with that, I feel like you've just encapsulated the heart of beauty hunting, is to use whatever we have access to behold beauty, and then to turn around and then leave those beauty encounters behind for other people to have as well.
And ultimately, so people can connect with their creator.
And so we can all together make the world a more beautiful place. And Kevin, you're doing your part, brother. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much.
Awesome. Well, it's been a lot of fun. And if you want to connect with Kevin and find out more about his story, we will leave links to all things Kevin Lowe in the show notes. And Kevin, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Beauty Hunters podcast. I hope this episode has encouraged you. If so, would you please take 30 seconds and share it with other creatives in your life? And please leave a quick written review on Apple Podcasts. Your reviews keep us inspired and help more people discover the podcast. Okay, time for us to hit the road. We're off to our next art show. We'll meet you back on Monday for another episode.
Until our next encounter, always remember that your creativity will make the world a more beautiful place.